This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you are listening to The Morning Run. It's 7:06 a.m. on Wednesday, the 24th of April. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. In about half an hour, we're going to discuss the factors that Malaysian judges take into account in criminal sentencing and the state of access to justice in the legal system here. But as always, we are going to kickstart the morning with a recap on how global markets closed overnight.
U.S. markets all had a very nice shade of green. The Dow was up 0.7%, S&P 500 up 1.2%, and the Nasdaq up 1.6%. Over across in Asia, the notable exception was the Shanghai Composite that was down 0.7%, but the Nikkei up 0.3%, Hang Seng up 1.9%, Singapore's STI up 1.5%, and FBM KLC up 0.1%.
Well, for some thoughts on what's possibly moving markets, we have on the line with us Carlos Casanova, Senior Economist with UBP. Carlos, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Now, investors are beginning to price in the possibility of the Fed actually increasing rates this year, with the options market suggesting a 20% chance. What would a tightening by the Fed mean for central bank calculations here in the Asian region?
Well, first of all, we are not yet pricing in, at least our own house view is not yet pricing in a Fed hike. Mm. And the main reason behind that rationale for us is that inflation has come down somewhat from its peak. And so that has resulted in positive real rates of around 2%, which historically for an economy like the US is considered to be relatively tight. So we do think that there's scope for things to cool in the US, assuming that this real rate remains at 2%. Of course, the Fed is not going to cut interest rates either until the conditions that it set for itself are met. And those include, inflation falling below 3%. But unfortunately, given current developments in the market, we think that it is not possible for that to happen before September. So scenario is only two or potentially one rate cut this year, starting in September.
And just building
in terms of Asian markets, sorry, to answer your question, in terms of what does that mean for Asian markets? Even European markets, ECB and the Bank of England, where the conditions for cutting interest rates are arguably already there, they are dragging their feet. So I think it's very difficult for Asian central markets to leapfrog the Fed. Mm. We didn't see it during the tightening. They sort of like waited and waited. And then when it was very clear that the world was entering a global tightening cycle, only then did Asian central banks start to tighten. And so I think this time around is going to be the same. Asian central banks are waiting for the Fed. They're waiting to see if there's going to be a decoupling in terms of ECB, Bank of England, and the Fed. We've already seen the Swiss National Bank implement its first rate cut. And so that means that any decision will have to be postponed to the fourth quarter of this year, or more likely, depending on how the disinflationary process goes in the US. We can talk about that too if you want, 2025.
And Carlos, turning our attention to Japan, the Bank of Japan will meet this Friday. And while there are no expectations for any monetary policy changes, what will you be looking for in Governor Ueda's statement? What are the factors that will influence the timeline of the next rate hike?
For Bank of Japan, it's interesting because they also sort of need to get on with their process, irrespective of what happens with the Fed. But they're also a little bit stuck. We have seen inflation remain stubbornly high in Japan, but that continues to be driven by external factors such as a steep weakening of the Japanese yen. We are now at 155 against the dollar, and also a temporary spike in oil prices. So those factors are not really what Ueda was wanting to see. He was hoping to see external inflation factors drive a change in rhetoric at home, forcing companies and individuals to change their behavior. And we've seen sort of that first step with wages increasing more than expected this year. But the follow-through of that is not visible yet. We haven't seen that then mean that Japanese consumers are feeling more confident and spending more money in the domestic economy. So I think what we may see coming out of Ueda this Friday is no rate hike, potentially some changes in his inflation forecast, as there are some upside risks. So it's natural that Bank of Japan would move up their inflation forecast. Of course, that also entails that inflation will be above Bank of Japan's 2% target between now and the end of the year, which means that they have the room to do one more small 10 basis point rate hike in October. But unless they see strong visibility that domestic inflation is picking up due to strong domestic consumption, I think Bank of Japan will unfortunately not be able to say that they have won the battle yet. So the first step has been there, the second step not so much.
Carlos, can we talk about currencies, please, especially in Asia? Because with the Fed unlikely to raise rates as aggressively as initially thought, US dollar still has been gaining strength. Looking at the Bloomberg Dollar Spot Index, is up almost 4% on a year-to-date basis. What pressure does it have on emerging market central banks? Because we did see Bank Indonesia intervene when the rupiah slid past 16,000.
No, that's right. So as the market's repricing in this new Fed reality, I think the sort of shock to the oil market is kind of somewhat been unraveled already this week. But the truth is, services remain very strong in the US. And so it's going to be very difficult for the Fed to argue to cut rates. So as a result, we've seen the yield curve shift up. And we've also seen the yield curve steepen on the back of an increase in long-term yield. So the 10-year has gone up to almost, almost 4.7% again. But what is more interesting for FX markets is the short end, so the 2-year curve yield, which remains at 5%. That means that the differential in terms of two-year yields between Asia and the US has widened as a result of this repricing in Fed expectations. And of course, FX markets are very correlated with short-term yields, so we do expect that that is going to exacerbate the depreciatory pressures across the board. So everybody is down against the dollar this year. The dollar is up 5% year-to-date. The worst performer in Asia is the Japanese yen, of course, it's down 10%, but everybody has, as a result, experienced some sort of increase in depreciatory pressures. And this is not going to change until we have good visibility that the disinflationary process in the US is continuing and the Fed will essentially cut interest rates. So I think the risks are two-sided here. It could just mean temporary depreciatory pressures, and starting from September, things improve for Asia, or it could mean a new reality, you know, where the Fed is not able to cut interest rates because it never cuts interest rates with the PMI above 50 and employment actually going down and inflation above 3%. And in that case, I think central banks around Asia need to reconsider their strategies, and we could see some meaningful moves as a result of that. No sort of 1997 or currency war outcome, but definitely some of the currency pairs that have been hit the most would, technical levels would definitely be moving.
Carlos, thank you as always for the chat. That was Carlos Casanova, senior economist with UBP, giving us his take on some of the trends that we could see moving markets in the days and weeks ahead. A lot of attention on what central banks are going to be doing over the next couple of weeks. But let's turn our attention to the U.S. earnings season, because one of the Magnificent Seven did come up with their results yesterday. Long awaited. We've been talking about it all week. It is, of course, Tesla. They reported their steepest year-on-year sales decline since 2012, but shares still rose because they actually announced a renewed push to accelerate the launch of cheaper cars.
That's right. Not magnificent results, but perhaps more mundane results. Earnings per share in the first 3 months of the year came in at 45 cents, lower than the expected 52 cents. Sales fell by 9% to $21.3 billion. This was in line with its first year-over-year drop in delivery since 2020, but still short of the expected $22.3 billion. Automotive revenues declined 13%. Automotive gross margin also under pressure. It was at 16.4% versus the expected 17.6%.
Okay, so looks like the street is looking ahead, not really caring so much about the bad numbers. I think because it was already expected and it's pretty much in the price. When you consider how Tesla has done on a year-to-date basis, the stock is down 42%. It's the worst performing of the Magnificent Seven, and we hear jokes about the Magnificent Sevens being soon the Magnificent Six or even the Magnificent Five. But I think the question marks in terms of Elon Musk's strategy. So he clearly already knows he needs to sing the right tune, which is why affordable cars are going to be rolled out. Although there's a bit of a confusion as to whether these are new cars, because it was already a long-discussed low-cost model, sometimes dubbed Model 2, or is this something new completely? He also has a tendency to announce very ambitious targets in terms of launches and then delay them all the time. So is he buying time, or is he really going to be able to execute?
So are you worried it's a publicity stunt that's just artificially driving prices then?
I was going to say, do you know what is a publicity stunt? I think ahead of earnings, Tesla supposedly delivered Katy Perry's Cybertruck. And Katy Perry had a post on social media posing with her new Cybertruck. A lot of speculation from the social media users about whether this was meant to distract from the rather tepid numbers, as you said.
But I think investors can see through all this. I mean, it's very interesting. You talk about the share price really having declined 41%. At its peak, right, Tesla was at $408. In November 2021. It's now trading at $145. But you know, it's not the valley yet, you know. If in early January 2023, it touched $113. So never discount the man.
Never, but the street is discounting him at the moment because there's only 21 buys, 27 holds, 14 sells. Consensus target price, however, still higher than current share price, $185.39. During regular market hours, it was up $2.63 to $144.68. Really, I think he's paying the price of whether he's focusing on his businesses, he's being distracted by X. There seems to be a muddled strategy when it comes to Tesla. Mm-hmm. And nonetheless, I think we'll find out later when we talk to Ray Kwok of CGS Securities. The whole entire global EV market dynamics has changed so much. When Tesla was starting, they were the golden child. They were all about luxury. But now you've got all these Chinese automakers wanting a slice of that pie.
All right. It's 7:18 in the morning. We're going to head into some messages, but we'll come back to look at more of the top stories in the newspapers and portals this morning. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.